You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
Everybody
and I'm
ready? And you're what?
And I'm Carolyn Nelson.
My goodness. And you're who?
Pooh.
She's Pooh. Is everybody ready? We'll try it again one more time. Okay, is everybody ready?
Yeah.
Go.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Rabbi. Happy birthday to you.
Well, Deadeye, you thought you got away with it, but you didn't. And we've got your birthday present down here, if you feel like coming on down to the studio. And this is from all the girls up at Katie's Country Kitchen. Hoping that they'd be where Rosalie's at now, but, you know, that's how it goes. And from Rosalie also, a very, very happy birthday, my friend. And for everybody else out there, pay attention. Make sure you've got pen and paper, because you're going to school tonight. The Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence. The purpose, ladies and gentlemen, of the Revolution was to break the bonds of government restraint, domination, and the unjust taxation of the people's substance without their consent. America was founded on the principle that there was law higher than any earthly law and an authority higher than any earthly authority. The Declaration of Independence, our first organic law, established and defined the fundamental principles underlying the source of law for America's republic system of government, not democracy. America was established, dear listeners, as a government unlike any ever previously established on this earth, not demanded by the powers of a monarch for his own enrichment, but entitled by the powers of the earth for the purpose of protecting the happiness, freedom, and property of the people. America was established not by the authority of the codified statutes of men, but by the authority of natural entitlement, by the superior intelligence of the laws of nature and of nature's God, and that's exactly the way our forefathers penned it. Those of you who insist that nature's God is not the God of your religion, it doesn't matter what religion you adhere to, God made the laws of nature. The laws of nature are what make everything work, and all life, all matter, are subject to those laws. Therefore, it is the superior intelligence of the laws of nature and of nature's God. Quote, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station as sovereigns, and that's an insert, to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, unquote. Those are the verbatim opening lines to the Declaration of Independence. John Quincy Adams eloquently defined America's system of law as, and I quote, our political way of life is by the laws of nature, of nature's God, the moral ruler of the universe, and a rule of right and wrong, of just and unjust, binding upon man, preceding all institutions of human society and of government, unquote. The following excerpt from the first prayer in Congress summarizes our founding fathers' intent to create a government, not under man, but under God. And I quote, O Lord, our heavenly Father, look down in mercy on these American states who have fled to thee desiring to be henceforth dependent only on thee. Unquote. Man was to be the trustee for God's laws. The underlying principle at the foundation of the higher law, which have been extended to the common law, are right, wrong, morality, justice, truth, equality, empathy, and logic. Now, equality doesn't mean that all men are equal at all times, for all reasons, under all circumstances. It is not true. All men are created equal, are born equal under the law, with the equal protection, equal opportunities, and the equal ability to make of himself what he will. After that, the game is always on uneven footing. Always. Basically, it means that all men are equal under the law. To be law, it had to be logical. It had to be something that all people considered to be just and fair. The fundamental principle of this law is summed up in one royal law which is the basis for almost every religion and philosophy. It is based upon the principle of universal love. I want you to listen carefully. I've been talking slowly so that no one could miss the meaning of this discourse. James chapter 2, verse 8 says, quote, "If ye fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well," unquote. Notice it does not say, thou shalt love your black neighbor as thyself, or thou shalt love your Jewish neighbor as thyself, or thou shalt love your white neighbor as thyself, or thou shalt love your Oriental neighbor as thyself, or thou shalt love thy Christian neighbor as thyself. Listen very carefully, because a lot of you like to twist the words of the Bible to suit your agendas. James chapter 2, verse 8 says, quote, "If ye fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well," unquote. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12 says, and I quote, "Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them. This is the law," unquote. And pay special attention to this last one, for this makes it very, very clear. Matthew chapter 22, verses 36 through 40. Quote, "Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus said to him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law," unquote. Now, if you do nothing else for the rest of your life, I would ask that you ponder what you just heard and understand that he made no qualifications, in fact, he never made any qualifications as to what color your neighbor should be, or what religion your neighbor should belong to, or how old they should be, or anything else. Simply love thy neighbor as thyself. Now this leads us into the common law, which was and is the law of the 50 states. It's the law of common sense, of reason, of justice, of truth, of what all men, in any circumstance, would say is just. Quote, "The United States adopted the common laws of England with the Constitution," unquote. Caldwell versus Hill, 176, S.E. 383, 1934. I quote, "The law of the land means the common law," unquote. Taylor versus Porter, 4 Hill, 140, 146. State versus Simon, 2 Spears, 761 and 767. Quote, "The common law of England, so far as it is not repugnant to or inconsistent with the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution or the laws of this state, is the rule of decision in all the courts of this state," unquote. Section 22.2, California Government Code. The common law originated as the unwritten law of England. Unwritten. It was unwritten because everyone agreed to it. Over the centuries, it had been determined that these laws were fair and just. It is rooted in the Magna Carta, signed by King John in 1215. It limited the powers of the king and guaranteed liberties of the people. Of the people. It is derived from principles rather than rules. It does not consist of absolute, inflexible rules, but rather of broad and comprehensive principles based upon justice, reason, conscience, truth, and common sense. You've all heard me tell you before that my grandmother taught me that when confronted with any problem or any new question which I had not investigated before, always first give it the common sense test. If it failed that test, very likely it would fail all tests, and I have to say that she's never been wrong in that particular instance. Now, this common law, this jurisprudence system, is based on judicial precedent or court decisions rather than the mass volumes of codes and absolutist legislative enactments for the citizens subject to exclusive U.S. jurisdiction. The common law has only two solid principles upon which all law is based. Number one, do not encroach upon the rights or property of others. Most of you violate that one principle every single day of your life. And number two, keep all contracts and agreements that you enter into knowingly, voluntarily, and intentionally. And many of you violate that also. Most people, in fact, their word is no good. When you give your word, it is a contract. Under the common law, if there's no victim, there's no crime. Now make sure that you understand that, because if everybody understood this principle and put it into effect, we could empty our prisons and jails in one day and be back to a free, to a freedom-loving country, and most of these phony crime statistics would disappear. You have to understand, they've been created to manipulate you into accepting more control over your life, into causing you to want to give up your right to keep and bear arms. For most of the people who are in prison in the United States today are in prison because they committed what has been ruled to be a crime which has no victims at all. Think about that. If there's no victim, there's no crime. There must be an injured party. Under the common law, an American citizen is free to conduct his affairs according to his own conscience as long as he keeps his voluntary, intentional agreements and does not encroach upon the rights of others. Socialists can't stand that. They could never live in such a world. And the rest of you, most of you, that is, are too stupid to understand it. You see, the common law is based upon principles of morality, what you're trying to get rid of. Trying to get rid of moral standards. Without moral standards, there can be no safety for anyone. The common law is based upon these principles of morality, logic, and reason. Regarding the law of reason, Thomas Paine quoted the Greek philosopher Plutarch in a pamphlet called Common Sense. Quote, "To follow God is to obey reason is the same thing," unquote. Nearly every adult in the 13 original colonies read Common Sense. It was the rallying force which led to the massive support of the Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War. The basis of the common law are the laws of morality and reason. At the Nuremberg trials, Nazi defendants claimed innocence on the grounds that they were under orders and obeying Germany's laws at that time. The prosecution argued that, quote, "there is a higher law than any government can impose upon us," unquote. The judges agreed, stating, quote, "the fact that the defendant acted pursuant to an order of his government or of a superior shall not free him from responsibility," unquote. In that significant decision, the court acknowledged that a higher law existed above that of the government. The Nazi defendants had broken the laws which the Declaration of Independence defines as the laws of nature and of nature's God. That is, the laws of morality and reason, and therefore the Nazi defendants were executed, and rightly so. There are guards, ladies and gentlemen, guards posted for the future security of America's citizens. You see, one of the promises contained in the Declaration of Independence was that America's new government would provide new guards for the future security of America's citizens. Those guards were written into the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution. Many of you would claim that the Declaration of Independence has no force of law and has no place in this nation, since it was written long before the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. I've got news for you. The Declaration of Independence is the first article of law ever written in this country and stands as the first article of law. The Articles of Confederation were never repealed, were never discarded, and stand as the second body of law in this nation. And the Constitution and the Bill of Rights established the federal government in the District of Columbia and stand as the third law and guardian of the future security of Americans' citizens. So when we discuss the Declaration of Independence and even the Articles of Confederation, they still stand as force of law in this nation today. Because of these future guards against governmental abuse, it's not necessary, folks, for us to start another revolutionary war if we feel our rights are being abused. Marching upon Washington, D.C. with an armed militia is a recipe for total destruction, and the labeling of all patriots and militiamen as terrorists, and the entire population of the people of this country would support their extermination, and you must understand that. Our rights have already been memorialized into law. All we need is an intellectual revolution for the purpose of learning our rights and claiming them under the law. If each individual American in this country would study the real law, understand it and apply it in his daily life, and refuse to be the slave of the Federal District of Columbia in their phony law, their statutes, which do not apply to sovereign citizens of sovereign states, there would be no problem for us ever again, beginning on the day that everyone did this. Now, if this does not happen, there's going to come a day when they're going to come after the very last vestige of freedom and of any individual rights that all of us possess. And it is our duty to exercise the rights that we have, guaranteed to us by our Creator and protected by the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And in particular, the second article in amendment to form militia units and use our weapons to reclaim and reestablish this nation under God, but not until. Until we must work every way that we must, that we can, to work within the law. If there ever is another Waco, Texas, if there ever is another Randy Weaver, if there ever is any incident as bad as those two individual incidents in this nation, then we must exercise our rights to the militia and to keep and bear arms to stop any of those actions. They must never be allowed to happen again in this country. We are the sovereigns. The power is vested with us. We the people, and with no one else. In the following affirmation within the Declaration of Independence, our founding fathers explicitly and eloquently defined the status of people, the origin and nature of the people's rights, and the purpose and source of power of the government. And these are probably the most dynamic and meaningful words ever written in the history of America, words that many, many men and women have given their lives for. Pay very, very close attention. And even if you've heard these words before, or if you have read them before, open your ears, open your mind, and open your heart, and listen once more. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed." Unquote. Now, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America is the original title of the declaration. Note that our founding fathers did not title our country the United States of America or the United States. They entitled our country America. 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 And were merely establishing themselves as states as opposed to colonies that were united, lowercase u. United with a lowercase u, and it means everything in law. United, lowercase u, in America. The word united was an adjective modifying states with a capital S. They were the united with a small u, states with a capital S of America, capital A. The word united with a small u was not a proper noun, and this will be relevant in future episodes of the hour of the time, especially when we talk about the two United States. Now let's define the Declaration of Independence. The truth. Quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident," unquote. The truths within this grand document are so obvious that they are immediately apparent to our innate sense of logic and justice, and all people believe these to be truths. The status of the people. Quote, "That all men are created equal," unquote. This is the foundation of our American legal philosophy of equality for all under the law. Doesn't mean that some scumbag that never did a lick of work in his life, who's always on the dole, yet is perfectly healthy, but always has a pain, is equal to a man, no matter how poor, who works every day and produces and pays his own way. That's not what it means. But that's what socialists like to drivel from their mouths. The nature of rights. The nature of rights. Well, let's go back to the origin of rights. The origin of rights. Quote, "That they are endowed by their Creator," unquote. That means our rights were endowed by our Creator. They are inborn from God, and therefore cannot be taken away. In fact, if they're given to you by God, you cannot even give them away yourself. The nature of rights. Quote, "With certain unalienable rights." Unalienable means incapable of being alienated, surrendered, or transferred. Rights, something to which one has a just or lawful claim. What one fairly has coming, an individual's absolute prerogative to correctness, justice, and that which is honorable. Unquote. And those definitions are from Webster's Dictionary. types of rights. Quote, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now notice, ladies and gentlemen, it says that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That means that we are not limited to just these rights. It says among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which means we have many more rights. These terms are expansive in meaning, as they have been interpreted over and over again by the Supreme Court. The purpose of government, quote, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, unquote. You see, the purpose of government, therefore, is to secure and protect the rights of the people and for no other purpose. The source of the government's power, quote, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed, unquote. Ladies and gentlemen, the government obtains its power only. The time, ladies and gentlemen, is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets, the only thing throughout the history of the world that is proven to keep its worth in economic trouble, hard times. Hard times are coming. Hard times are already here for many of us, and it's not going to get better. As the government bombards us with phony statistics trying to make you believe that their phony recession, which was really a depression, is over with, and you look around and say, how can it be over with? Look at what's going on. Look at how many people are unemployed. And then they tell you that the unemployment figures are lower, and it is a lie. You see, they only count unemployed as those actively receiving unemployment benefits. Once your benefits have run out, you are not counted as unemployed, even though you may still not have a job. They also don't count the homeless. They don't count the homeless. They don't count those on welfare. They don't count anyone on general relief. The truth, ladies and gentlemen, is that there are more unemployed people today in the United States of America than ever before in the history of this country. Did you hear what I said? And all of you who claim that the Great Depression was so bad, it doesn't hold a candle to what's happening to many people today. It doesn't count the families who lost their farms. The rural people who never were employed, owned their own farms and lost their farms. They're not unemployed and they're not counted as unemployed. Do you know how many farmers and farm families have lost their source of income, their source of food, the roof over their heads? Do you know how many hundreds of thousands and millions upon millions of farmland has fallen into corporate hands by the ruse of the banks? You don't? Well, I suggest you find out. This phony counterfeit prosperity is going to do you in if you believe in it. Call our sponsors. Ask them what you can do to protect yourself. Look around at the faces of your loved ones. If you cannot this moment tell them that you have taken positive steps to ensure their financial future in the coming troubled times, if you cannot do that, then you had better call. In fact, you must call. You are obligated to call. Whether or not you do business with our sponsor depends upon you. But you must take steps with someone, somehow, to protect yourself and your loved ones against what is looming in our immediate future. Call 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-289-2646. And do it right now. You'll be glad that you did. Supreme Court gave the following extremely eloquent summary of unalienable rights, and I quote, "As in our interaction with our fellow men, certain principles of morality are assumed to exist, without which society would be impossible, so certain inherent rights lie at the foundation of all action, and upon a recognition of them alone can free institutions be maintained. These inherent rights have never been more happily expressed than in the Declaration of Independence, the evangel of liberty to the people, quote, we hold these truths to be self-evident, unquote, words so plain that their truth is recognized upon their mere statement that all men are endowed, not by the edicts of emperors or decrees of parliament or acts of Congress, but by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That is, rights which cannot be bartered away, are given away, are taken away, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and to secure these, not grant them, but secure them, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed," unquote. Butchers Union Company versus Crescent City Company, 111 United States Supreme Court ruling, 746 at 756 and 757. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Where does that appear? We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. How many of you would do such a thing? How many of you would utter such a thing and mean it as a pledge, as an oath, as a contract with your fellow men, with your neighbors? How many of you would say, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor? It is the last paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, and it shows the sincerity of the people's belief in the sacred principles contained therein. Those signatories, at that moment in time, We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Ladies and gentlemen, many of you have been asking when we're going to reopen the membership for CAGI. It's going to be very soon, and there are going to be strict requirements. You must take an oath of allegiance to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and you must repeat this pledge along with that oath. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor, and anyone who will not do that will not be a member of CAGI. It's as simple as that. Quote, we, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress, assembled appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Unquote. How many of you have a sacred honor? How many of you would pledge your fortune against the survival of the nation? How many of you would give your lives for anything without threat of going to jail just because you believe in it? How many of you, and for what? Rectitude means righteousness of a principle, conduct, moral virtue of intentions, and that's from Webster's College Dictionary. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the Declaration of Independence was the promise. The Articles of Confederation were a way station between the promise and the fulfillment. The Constitution of the United States was the fulfillment. Listen very carefully to the preamble to the United States Constitution. I quote, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Unquote. The sacred rights of mankind held within the Constitution are not to be rummaged, for among old parchments are musty records. They are written as with a sunbeam in the whole volume of human nature by the hand of divinity itself, and can never be erased or obscured by mortal power. Alexander Hamilton said that. Quote, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Unquote. The Bill of Rights is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. The Bill of Rights did not grant us our rights. Our rights have existed from birth as they were endowed by our Creator. Even if there were no Constitution, we would still have rights. Even if someone is not an American, they have inborn rights. Notice it doesn't qualify anything. Nothing is qualified. All people, all colors, all religion. The Declaration of Independence is merely the codification of those rights into American law. The Bill of Rights was written not to establish our rights, but to prohibit the government from infringing upon those rights. The First Amendment states that, quote, Congress shall make no law. And it means infringing upon our rights. The foundation of our government and law is respect for rights.
by each other and by the government. The law, ladies and gentlemen, among equal sovereigns is that one sovereign may not infringe upon the rights of other sovereigns. This principle has its roots in the biblical golden rule, or what is known as the royal law. Quote, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you," unquote. Even the most staunch atheist would have to agree that this must be the fundamental law of any civilized, intelligent, and self-respecting and peaceful society, and it comes from the Decalogue. The Decalogue. The Ten Commandments handed to Moses by God. And yet, these Ten Commandments, which provide the very basis of civilized society, are forbidden to be displayed in a public school. How low do we have to sink before we stop sinking? You see, we the people have awesome powers, and the Constitution also has awesome powers. Our research has provided conclusive evidence that there is no law within the Internal Revenue Code or regulations that makes a citizen of the 50 states exercising his or her fundamental right to labor in a common lawful occupation in one of the 50 states liable for the graduated income tax. Any such tax, ladies and gentlemen, must be and is voluntary. Why, you ask? What is the awesome power that can stop the ruthless IRS in its tracks? Why can't Americans have a mandatory income tax imposed upon them like citizens of the rest of the world? The power, ladies and gentlemen, restraining the Internal Revenue Service are our unalienable rights, which were endowed to us by our Creator, declared by our Declaration of Independence, and protected by our Constitution. These fundamental rights are the birthright of every citizen born in one of the 50 states. Our Supreme Court has ruled that our right to labor in a lawful and unregulated occupation is a fundamental right, and that the fundamental rights cannot be taxed. Did that knock you out of your chair, you silly sheeple that have been filing and paying something that you don't have to file and pay? You think that people who don't file and pay are criminals or tax protesters or terrorists? That's not true. They're law-abiding citizens who know and understand the law. You are the fools, the sheeple, who don't know the law, don't understand it. And not only that, you're a bunch of blithering, lily-livered cowards who file and pay for no other reason than you are afraid. And that is the truth. The truth hurts, and you don't like to hear it. But that is the truth. Contrary to what the government has misled us into believing for over 200 years, the government is still bound by the awesome protective chains of our Constitution. Our forefathers passed on an incredible gift to us, their posterity, when they memorialized our unalienable God-given rights into law in our Constitution as the supreme law of the land. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't realize it, but our Constitution is so powerful, the Supreme Court has ruled that any law which is contrary to it is automatically null and void. Let me say that again. I told you before that all laws, all legislation, all regulations regulating the right of the people to keep and bear arms are unconstitutional, therefore null and void. You've heard me say this over and over again, not to pay any attention to any of those laws. And here is the reason. Our Constitution is so powerful, ladies and gentlemen, that the Supreme Court has ruled that any law which is contrary to it is null and void. And that is what I base those statements upon. The Constitution was the legacy our founding fathers, the original tax protesters, left us to provide perpetual protection from future governmental restraints and abuses of power. It's what they gave us to use, and built into it are everything that we need to remain free and sovereign, and for our posterity to remain free and sovereign. And also everything is built into it by which we can use to destroy ourselves and contract ourselves back into slavery, which many of you have already done. You see, this was the great experiment. And its sole purpose was twofold. One, to topple the kings and queens from off their thrones, and number two, to discover if man could be a sovereign and rule himself. And if this grand experiment has failed, dear listeners, it's because we have failed. No one could destroy us. No one can take anything away from us. No one can subvert us. No one but us. We have failed. Not our founding fathers, not our congressmen and our senators, not the presidents of the United States, not the great bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. or anywhere else. We have done it by ourselves through our ignorance, our apathy, and yes, our total stupidity. Following is the silver bullet that our research found buried away and never repealed in the original 1939 income tax regulations. It is the loophole that keeps the Internal Revenue Code from being voided for reasons of unconstitutionality. 1939, 26 CFR, section 9.22B-1. Listen carefully. Exemptions, exclusions from gross income. Certain items of income are exempt from tax and may be excluded from gross income. 1. Those items of income which are, under the Constitution, not taxable by the federal government. And 2. Those items of income which are exempt from tax on income under any act of Congress. Unquote. This powerful income tax regulation has not ever and cannot ever be repealed because of the supremacy clause of the Constitution. It is, in fact, the ultimate, unalterable, impenetrable tax loophole. The above regulation, ladies and gentlemen, that I have just read to you, exempts and excludes from gross income all compensation earned by a citizen of the 50 states exercising his or her fundamental right to labor in a common lawful occupation. This type of compensation is, under the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Constitution, not taxable by the federal government. This section also creates an exclusion from federal taxation for all property unless such tax is equally apportioned. Do you know what that means? You better find out. And as you will learn, the Supreme Court, in a decision that has never been overturned, found the government's direct, unapportioned income tax to be unconstitutional. As you will also learn, the 16th Amendment did not overturn this decision. Now, the following, ladies and gentlemen, are Supreme Court decisions that have never been overruled. It is precedent law for the citizens of the 50 states under the Constitution and the law. And I'm not going to get into too many of them because we're going to run out of time very shortly. The right to labor is a fundamental right, and as you've already heard, fundamental rights cannot be taxed. The Supreme Court ruled in 1970. You see, the first thing many people say is, you're quoting Supreme Court decisions from 1810. Nope, not true at all, folks. The Supreme Court ruled in 1970, quote, waivers of constitutional rights not only must be voluntary, they must be knowingly intelligent acts done with sufficient awareness of the relevant circumstances and consequences, unquote, Brady versus the United States, 397 United States Supreme Court ruling 742 at 748. I quote, a state or the United States may not impose a charge for the enjoyment of a right granted by the federal Constitution, unquote. Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, 319, United States Supreme Court Decision 105 at 113. I quote, every man has a natural right to the fruits of his own labor, as generally admitted, and no other person can rightfully deprive him of those fruits and appropriate them against his will, unquote. The Antelope, 23, United States Supreme Court Decision, 66,120. I quote, the right to labor and to its protection from unlawful interference is a constitutional as well as a common law right. Every man has a natural right to the fruits of his own industry, unquote. That is 100% of the fruits, ladies and gentlemen. 48, American Jurisprudence, 2nd, Section 2, page 80. This is the American Jurisprudence 2, a compilation of unoverruled court decisions. And the last one that I will read tonight. The Butcher Supreme Court decision expanded our unalienable right to pursue happiness, to include our right to pursue any lawful business that did not infringe on the rights of others. It also defined our labor as our most sacred property. Therefore, a tax on labor would be a direct tax on property. Quote, among these unalienable rights, as proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence, is the right of men to pursue their happiness, by which is meant the right to pursue any lawful business or vocation in any manner not inconsistent with the equal rights of others, which may increase their prosperity or develop their faculties so as to give them their highest enjoyment. It has been well said that the property which every man has is his own labor, as it is the original foundation of all other property, so it is the most sacred and inviolable. To hinder his employing, in what manner he thinks proper, without injury to his neighbor, is a plain violation of the most sacred property, unquote. Butchers Union Company versus Crescent City Company, 111 United States Supreme Court Decision, 746 at 756, 757. Don't miss tomorrow night. Good night. Wake up, and God bless you all.